Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. France is trying to figure out how dangerous your jeans are. I mean, your dungarees. And they've commissioned a report, and the results are now out. I get this from London's Guardian newspaper. And they ask, in an article out today, why washing your jeans can ruin the earth. And they say, want to save the planet? Wear your jeans 2 days a week, wash them every fifth day, and let them dry by themselves. Or better yet, don't wash them at all, and don't even think of ironing them. If you do, you'll destroy the earth. So this is the conclusion of a report commissioned by France's Environment Agency on the ecological impact of a pair of pants, a pair of denims. So they looked at an average pair of jeans made of 1 pound, 5 ounces of denim, lined with just over an ounce of polyester, and made with 6 rivets and a single button. Worn 1 day a week for 4 years and the devastating ecological consequences. I mean, they're just nuts, right? All of Europe is nuts. All of Europe is nuts. Now let's get to more rational news. Florida, there is a hurricane warning in Florida. You know that every tropical storm or hurricane, they give it a name with a letter of the alphabet beginning with the A's and going through the Z's. And so now there's a hurricane warning for part of Florida's Gulf Coast today, Monday, June 12th, 2006. And what's the name of the storm? It's the first one. It's an A. Okay, here we go. Hurricane warning for tropical storm Alberto Gonzalez. Alberto Gonzalez threatening the state of Florida. Officials warn that some areas could see a storm surge of up to 10 feet. And Governor Jeb Bush says, we're talking about powerful forces. People need to take Alberto Gonzalez very seriously. And he's right. And of course, Gonzalez is dangerous. So we'll keep an eye out for him here at Bob Enyart Live at your research headquarters, and we'll let you know what the danger is and if it could be coming to your neighborhood in the near future. Okay. And let's hope that our country's learned a lot from last year's hurricane season when Katrina hit and it was obvious that the people who should have resigned were the mayor of New Orleans, the governor of Louisiana, the head of FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the head of Homeland Security. Those four should have resigned. And what, one of those four are gone now? It's too bad all four didn't have the decency to resign, but of course they didn't. All right, so what else is in the news? In Reno, Nevada, this is sad news. In Reno, Nevada, a judge was shot in the chest today, this morning. And he's in the courthouse on the third floor of the courthouse in Reno, Nevada, Judge Chuck Wheeler, 53 years old. And he's at the Mills B. Lane Justice Center. It's Justice Center. Did I read that right? Justice Center. But it's obviously tragic that he was shot in the chest. He was standing at the window when he was shot, and the police are not sure, as of this moment, whether the shot was fired from inside the courthouse or if it came from outside. Obviously, they'll figure out that soon enough. But there's a heavily armed police SWAT team on the scene, and they've closed off several blocks around the courthouse near Reno's downtown casino district. So Reno, beautiful city, right? Beautiful city. And right on the border of Nevada and California. So that's tragic, of course. And when a system is broken, you know, things go awry in bizarre ways. And when the criminal justice system is broken, things become especially terrible. I was at a graduation party. When was that? Saturday night for two homeschool kids graduated, members of Denver Bible Church. And they had a neighbor family over to one of the families. And he was lamenting about law enforcement and not being sufficiently effective. And we pointed out to him, and one of the guys at the party, one of the graduates' dads, was a law enforcement officer for years. And he pointed out, look, when law enforcement has a conflict of interest, it undermines the credibility in the system itself. And so in America, when you commit a crime and you're found guilty or you plead guilty, you pay a fine to the system. And that's called a conflict of interest. And that should not be, because that adds to the reason why millions of people despise the criminal justice system. And an example was given. But first, let me give our phone number. If you'd like to call in to Bob and Yart Live, the number is 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. The example was how in Colorado, many counties, when they wrote speeding tickets, the money did not go to the sheriff's department. It just went into the general fund of the county. And so sheriffs would instruct their deputies, I don't want you wasting your time writing speeding tickets. If you got to do it, you know, if it's an extreme or an egregious example, then do it. But generally, don't waste your time. Well, then the county commissioners figure out that they're losing a lot of revenue opportunity. So they change the law. They adopt a model traffic law. They call it model because that's what's being promoted around the country. And now when a parking ticket or a speeding ticket, any traffic ticket is written, the fine goes to the budget of the sheriff's department. So now this law enforcement officer at the graduation party Friday night, he said, now we have a quota that the average cop on the beat needs to write 10 tickets a day. I don't know if that was the average or their traffic guys. I could have that detail wrong. But he said it was a complete change in policy, whereas they were discouraged from wasting their time going after incidental traffic violators, and they were encouraged instead to actually fight crime. Now it's the opposite, and there's actually a quota per cop, and they have to write a lot of tickets every day. And why is that? Well, there's a conflict of interest. And when there's a conflict of interest, then that changes the behavior. And the government actually is not the enemy of crime, but they depend on crime for a significant percentage of their annual revenue. And that enables people to have better benefits packages and higher salaries and build larger kingdoms, fiefdoms, bureaucracies. So we need to make people aware that when you have a fine as part of a punishment for a crime, you are creating a conflict of interest in undermining the credibility of your criminal justice system, and that's wrong to do, because then people have that reason for disrespecting the law. Now let's go to the phones in Centennial, Colorado. John, welcome to Bob and Yart Live.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Doing well, sir. What's up?
In the Boston area where I'm from, I knew a lot of cops, and they had quotas. I mean, this was back 10 years ago when I used to live in that area.
Yeah.
They'd have to do a certain amount of speeding tickets, and then I remember them complaining about it, you know, where, you know, it was speeding ticket week, so they had to have 20 to 30 citations written. You know, that's how they funded their system. But anyway...
Well, John, it's important that the public have an inherent respect for law enforcement. And so, you know, people are not stupid, and they realize that so many laws in the system is in part designed to get revenue. And so people by the millions fundamentally disrespect our law enforcement, and that's really bad in so many ways. And so one of the things we need to advocate is to do away with fines. Fines paid to the government should not be part of a punishment in the criminal justice system.
Sure, I agree. The reason why I called, though, Bob, was, you know, the exhibit that's at the Science Museum with the, I can't remember the name of it, but it's like Body Parts.
Oh, yeah, Body Worlds 2.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Do you have any information on where they got these bodies?
Yeah, initially there was a controversy about where he got the bodies, and did he get them from Chinese prisoners who were executed or whatever. But now all the bodies, this guy's done this all over the world, and he has thousands of people who have willed their bodies to him.
Wow.
And so now all the bodies are, I believe, you know, taken in ethical ways. We actually went to this.
Oh, okay.
My wife Cheryl and I went, and we brought a friend who smokes. And we went because, you know, smoking, Christians get especially uptight about smoking, born-again Christians, but smoking is similar to eating too many Big Macs. I mean, those are similar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or maybe eating a bowl of ice cream every night. And smoking is a little worse, but they're sort of in the same category. And obviously it kills people, just like being overweight and having a lot of stress kills people. But this friend of ours smokes, and he smoked for a few years. And so we knew that in the Body Worlds 2 exhibit, they have actual cadavers, actual bodies. And it is, it's eerie. It's a bit eerie. There's something eerie about it. But they have lungs. And so actual lungs on a table, one set of lungs from a healthy person, and right next to it, the lungs from a smoker. And they tell you a little bit about each person and how they died. The smoker's lungs, they looked like they were carved out of a chunk of charcoal.
Oh, man.
That's what they looked like. It was unbelievable.
Now, did it deter the smoker?
Not yet. Not yet. And you know why? Because education has very little to do with it. I went to the hospital last Sunday, Lutheran Hospital, and I looked into the doctors and the staff lounge, and there were only two people in there, and they were both smoking.
Oh, wow.
And I remember that now for 40 years of my life, that you go to a hospital, you look in the lounge, and the doctors and the staff are smoking.
Well, I grew up in an Italian family like you, and I remember, like, my uncle used, his big fun thing would be to, like, blow smoke in my face when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, how disgusting. It'd be like 25 people or something smoking in some small room,
yeah.
You know, we'd be eating dinner.
But, you know, we do need to educate people, but education is not the answer.
Sure.
If education was the answer, then people in the medical community would not smoke because they're highly educated on the issue. But it's more of a heart issue. And I'm not talking about smoking, but I'm talking about bad behavior generally. It's more of a heart issue and a will issue than it is an education issue.
Yeah, we all seem to be trying to kill ourselves in one way or the other.
Yeah.
And you know, other than that, I was wondering how the, you know, the people over at 20th and Vine were doing.
Oh, wow. The pro-lifers at the Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
Well, we had a report at our church, Denver Bible Church, just this Sunday of the last child that was saved this past week, and it was a Spanish couple, and Joe Scott gave us the report. And Joe Scott, for how wonderful she is as a pro-life leader and a sidewalk counselor, she is one lousy Spanish speaker. She doesn't do a great job with her Spanish, but she went to one woman who was there, a pro-lifer, and she said, could you speak Spanish to this couple? My Spanish is terrible. And the woman would not do it because she said she was saying the rosary and Mary would save the baby.
Yeah.
And so we thought that was sad because Mary is a human being,
sure.
You know, just like we are. Mm-hmm. And Mary, you know, the angels are not God. They're angels.
Yeah.
And the angels are not omnipresent, right? Angels are not everywhere.
No.
Remember Daniel prayed and God sent, who'd he send? The angel Michael.
Sure.
And it took Michael a while to get to Daniel's side where God is omnipresent. He's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He's everywhere he wants to be. If he doesn't want to be in hell, he doesn't have to be there. And he knows everything he wants to know, and he can hear all of our prayers simultaneously. But angels, even the archangels, they don't know everything. They can't hear everyone's utterances simultaneously, and they can't be next to everyone because they're not God. Only God is God. And so Mary, for the wonderful woman that she is, blessed among women, and especially loved by Jesus Christ as his mother, his earthly mother, Mary is not omnipresent. She's not everywhere. So she's not standing next to the gal outside of the abortion clinic to hear her request. And she's not omniscient. She can't, just like the angels can't hear everything said simultaneously around the world, only God has attributes like that that enable him to do that. And so you're praying to someone who can't hear you to save a baby who's about to be killed. And Jo Scott is desperately trying to use her broken Spanish to talk to the wife, to the husband. And eventually, apparently, they didn't have enough cash to pay the abortion clinic. And the husband had to go out and get more money, which was good because it gave Jo Scott more time to talk to him going in and out of the building at 20th and Vine. And he broke down in tears. Third time she got to talk to him. And he went in and he brought his wife out and that little baby was saved. Yet another save by the Christians at 20th and Vine, Planned Parenthood.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah, it is a great story.
Yeah, she's doing a great work over there. I've been trying to get back over there.
Hey, John, I want to thank you so much.
Sure.
And if you do get there, say hi, and I'll try to get there, too, sometime soon.
All right, we'll see about that.
All right, God bless you. Appreciate that. We're going to go to the phones in just another moment, but I want to let you know, Friday we did a show, Real Science Friday, here at Bob and Yurt Live. We're going to do it once every 3 months on the Creation Research Society's Technical Journal, their quarterly. And we had interest generated in the Creation Research Society organization, and that was just great. But what I want to let you know is Fred Williams, who was doing the show with me, he mentioned that Friday night, the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship was having a meeting by a geologist, Dr. Patton. And Fred Williams and I went to the meeting, and it was absolutely tremendous. It was such a great meeting. It was about the Glen Rose, Texas, and the Paluxy River Basin down there, where they have been excavating footprints of dinosaurs and what look like human footprints. And this has been a big battle, a political battle within creation circles. But I will tell you, they have worked on this for 20 years now, and where they're challenged and they're told, oh, these footprints, they're not credible, they were etched in by creationists, this and that. They've continued to follow these tracks. They have one of the second longest dinosaur track in the world. And they have extraordinary human footprints, and they've excavated them. There's a river down there, the Paluxy River Basin. And early on, they were accused of, well, you guys carved these tracks. So they said, okay, well, let's follow the tracks in both directions, see where they go. And they were right at the river. So they detoured the river and they excavated under the river and the tracks continued. And you should see the work they've done. It was just extraordinary and very exciting. So anyway, let's go to the phones right now in Denver, Colorado. Rebecca, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Yes. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing really well, Rebecca. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I called because I'm making this sign for my little grocery cart that I take to the grocery store, and I have one sign now that says, Jesus is Lord.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of comments from people.
Right.
Not all good, but not all bad.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm making one now. It says, I'm going to say, now choose life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I wanted to know, that is in Deuteronomy, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is in Deuteronomy.
Do you know exactly where?
No, I don't.
Oh.
But you know what? I bet you I could find it before the show's over.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll be listening then.
All right, you listen, and sometimes it's hard to talk and look at the same time.
Yeah.
But I'll try to find that verse for you.
Okay, and it would give it more impact if I had if I could put Deuteronomy whatever on it.
Yeah, Deuteronomy. And let me tell you, do you know what the word Deuteronomy means?
No, I don't know.
All right. It comes from the Old Testament was written in Hebrew.
Uh-huh.
Right? But then it was translated into Greek because much of the ancient world spoke Greek.
Oh.
And 200 years before Christ, the Old Testament, the entire Old Testament, plus other Jewish books, were translated into Greek, and that's called the Septuagint.
Uh-huh.
And in the Septuagint, comes from a Greek word, deutero and namas. Namas means the law, and God gave the law in Exodus, the book of Exodus.
Uh-huh.
But then that's the second book of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
The fifth book tells the law again. It gives a review, a repetition, in order to emphasize with some additional information. So it's like the second repeating of the law, deutero for two.
Deutero is for two.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So Deuteronomy, like astronomy, the Greek word for namas is law. Or rules, and so the laws of how the planets go, that's astronomy.
Uh-huh.
And so Deuteronomy, by the way, it's here we have it, Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19.
19.
And you know what? You know who told me that? I was going to look it up.
Yeah.
But our affiliate here in Denver, KLTT, AM 670.
Yeah.
One of the engineers there, Jeff. Just called my board up here at our remote studio and said, tell Bob it's Deuteronomy 30:19, and he should have known that. So thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Rebecca.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
God bless you.
Okay, listen, Bob.
Yeah.
Could you give me your address? I want to send you a little something.
Well, sure. Our address, Bob Enyart Live.
Uh-huh.
Enyart is E-N-Y. A-R-T.
E-N-Y-A-R-T. Yeah, I know.
Bob Enyart. Yeah. It's one of those weird last names. You know, sometimes I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Bob Enyart.
Is that Greek?
Bob Enyart. No, it's Dutch German.
Dutch German.
Yeah, and my mother was fully Italian. So I'm quite a mix. But
okay.
It's Bob Enyart Live.
Live.
P.O. Box 583.
583.
Arvada.
Arvada.
Uh-huh. Arvada, Colorado.
Uh-huh.
CO 80001.
80001.
Yes.
Okay.
Rebecca,
all right.
One last thing.
Okay.
What do you need that sign for?
Well, I put it on my little grocery cart, and everybody can see it, and a lot of people talk to me about it, and I can witness to people.
You mean when you're shopping and going around?
Yeah, I walk to the grocery store. It's about 4 blocks from where I live.
Oh.
And I run into a lot of people, and so I can witness to people with that.
Well, that's great. Rebecca, thank you so very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
God bless you.
Okay, God bless you.
And when God says choose life, that's for loving him and obeying him, versus rebelling against him and disobeying him. And one of the ways you disobey God is if you ignore thou shalt not murder. If you ignore that, you're disobeying God and destroying yourself and others. So here in Deuteronomy chapter 30, I believe this is Moses speaking. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil, in that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and in other words, have children. And the Lord your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. But if your heart turns away so that you do not hear and are drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I announce to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to go in to possess. I call heaven and earth as witness today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey his voice, and that you may cling to him, for he is your life and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. Amen. Pretty neat. Choose life. Choose life. Now, to be a liberal, what do you got to do to be a liberal? To be a liberal, you have to try to protect the guilty, like the mass murderer rapist, from being executed, and advocate the killing of the innocent unborn child. That's a typical liberal position. To a liberal, if someone is going to kill an innocent unborn child, they will defend and support the killing of the unborn child, the innocent child, and they then try to protect the guilty mass murderer rapist from being executed. So they say, how could a pro-lifer support the death penalty? We say it's the difference between guilt and innocence. We're supposed to, society is, the government is supposed to punish the guilty and protect the innocent. So you execute the convicted kidnapper, murderer, rapist, and you protect the innocent child. So execute the guilty murderer and protect the innocent child. That's the Christian pro-life position. The liberal position is that you protect the convicted mass murderer, rapist, and you kill the innocent child. That's to be a liberal. You protect the guilty murderer and you kill the innocent baby. You see, so whose position is consistent and right and wise and good, and whose position is evil? It's evil to support the killing of the innocent and then to protect those who should not live. In fact, God, in the book of Ezekiel, God is speaking, and he says, do not profane me, killing people who should not die and keeping people alive who should not live. Imagine that. Now, where did God say that? Where is that? I think that's in, where is it? In Ezekiel 13, 19? Is that correct? See, sometimes we get these right. Ezekiel 13, 19. Let me see. Here it is. That's correct. And will you profane me among my people, God says, killing people who should not die and keeping people alive who should not live? Wow. And God says, and you do this by lying to my people who listen to lies. People like lies, right? We call them willfully ignorant. Like they say, O.J. Simpson is not guilty. They are willfully ignorant. They want to be ignorant. They don't want to know the truth. They will willfully ignore the evidence because of their political, philosophical commitments. And here they will say, well, we support the killing of a child and we will protect a convicted murderer rapist from being executed. So they will kill the innocent and protect the guilty. So they want to protect the mass murderer and they want to kill the unborn child. And they say, well, the unborn child, that's not a living human being. It's not a living human being. No, the unborn child, they say, you can kill him because it's not a person. So you could kill it. And so we ask, well, what is it? And, you know, they're not exactly sure. So we say, okay, first question, is it A, alive, or B, dead, or C, I don't know? We're talking about in the womb at the moment of fertilization and onward. Let's say the woman is going to Planned Parenthood to have her baby killed. Let's say she's 12, 13 weeks along. So she's going for an abortion. So obviously there's something in her womb that she doesn't want there. So we say, what is there in her womb? What is there? She's pregnant. That's why she's going for an abortion. And when you're pregnant, that's because you have a baby. That's what being pregnant means. But they say, no, it's not. It's not a baby. So we say, okay, to start off with, let's see where we disagree. Is it A, living, whatever's in her womb, or B, dead, or C, I don't know? So first answer that, and hopefully even the college philosophy professor will understand that it's living. But who knows? Then the second question, you ask, what species is it? Is it A, Homo sapien? Is it B, canine? Or is it C, I don't know? Which? Hopefully they'll know it's a Homo sapien. Hopefully they'll know it's a human being. Now you ask them that question and you find out how educated they are, because maybe they really don't know. But they should know these things. They should know that it's a living human being, and they say, I don't care, kill it anyway. That's because their heart in them is hardened, and they're in rebellion against God, and they will profane God, killing people who should not die and keeping people alive who should not live. You're listening to Bob and Yurt Live, our website, KGov, KGOV.com. We will be back right after this.
The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel, and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.
Ouch. Ouch, that hurt. Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger in a motorcycle accident. He lost most of his teeth, fractured his left sinus cavity bone, suffered a 9-inch cut to the back of his head and a broken jaw, and he injured both of his knees when he collided with a car, hit the windshield, went over the handlebars of his motorcycle, hit the windshield of the car, then bounced off the car and hit the pavement, hit his head. And this is after his coach was really harping on him to be more careful. He rides his motorcycle without a helmet. So he lost most of his teeth. This was today, June 12th, 2006. He won the Super Bowl this year, brought his team to a Super Bowl victory. Now if he goes again and he smiles for the cameras, it will be without teeth. Motorcycles, hey, they're fun, but it makes a lot of sense to wear a helmet. It's 20 times more likely if you drive the same miles on a motorcycle as someone in a car, you are 20 times more likely to be killed. 20 times more likely to be killed. The last year that I have statistics for, 2003, there were about 3,600 motorcycle fatalities, 3,600. And there's way fewer people riding motorcycles than driving cars. So 3,600 motorcycle fatalities. And Ben Roethlisberger avoided being another one of those today. Ouch, man. Lost most of his teeth, fractured his left sinus cavity bone, suffered a 9-inch laceration to the back of his head and a broken jaw, and injured both of his knees when he hit the ground. Man, that's rough. That'd be bad enough if he was an accountant, but he's a professional football player. Wow. And on tomorrow's show, we expect, sometimes things change on live radio, but we expect to talk about violent crime. Sadly, up. Violent crime is up with the numbers of murders and rapes going up. And we've been talking about this for some years. During the 90s, the approach to criminal justice was to put twice as many people in prison. And jail is a joke. Jail is a joke. Jail is school for criminals. So we had about 1 million people in jails and prisons around the country at the beginning of the 90s. And by the end of the 90s, we had about 2 million. And everyone was celebrating that violent crime rates were coming down. And of course they were, but we were spending hundreds of billions of dollars and locking up all these people, and eventually they would get out and they would be worse criminals when they got out. We're just delaying the crime. We're postponing the crime. We're not stopping the crime. We're just postponing it. And, of course, God does not authorize putting people in prison as a punishment. He authorizes incarceration only during the trial for a serious charge or a serious crime. Then you incarcerate the suspect during the trial. And then at the end of the trial, he's either acquitted and you free him, or you punish him, which is either flogging or restitution and flogging or the death penalty. That's it. It's simple. It's quick. And it's a deterrent. It's a great deterrent. Jail, meanwhile, jail is a joke. Jail is a joke for the most part. Actual criminals, there's very little deterrent effect by jail. Liberals say, oh, the death penalty is not a deterrent. Sure it is. Everyone we've ever put to death, there's been zero recidivism rate. Zero. They haven't gone on to murder a single new victim. Whereas the real joke is jail. Jail is not a deterrent. And they say, well, jail's not supposed to be a punishment. It's supposed to be for rehabilitation. That's just so stupid. I mean, how could they even say it? How could they get the phrase out of their mouths? It's so stupid. Oh, this child molester, we're going to rehabilitate him in jail. Rehabilitate him. Rehabilitate him my foot. It's just absurd. A child molester should be executed. Hey, isn't there some governing official on the East Coast wants to execute child molesters? Now, that's a step in the right direction. That's pretty neat. Okay. Bill O'Reilly, he's been on a campaign, successful campaign. Successful, that is, he's accomplishing his goal of getting child molesters locked up in jail. But it's too bad he hasn't spent the same time and energy advocating executing child molesters. Executing child molesters, which truly would save children from being molested. That truly would save children and women. And how about all the rapes in the country? Increasing number of rapes. So we'll talk about all this tomorrow. Okay? That's just a preview of the show tomorrow, Bob and Yurt Live. Our website, KGov, KGOV.com. Last week, I was bringing you excerpts from my monthly magazine, which is now out of print, which makes these real collector's items. Doesn't that sound like a quality magazine? Sounds great. It's called The Rational Inspirer, Do Right and Risk the Consequences. And this edition, this is from June 1993. And this is the one with the cover story with the pregnant cheerleader. Adams City High School takes state title, 108 babies born in one school year. That's the state record. Adams City Eagles, 108. Aurora Gateway, 80 for that year. 80 babies born at Aurora, 108 born at Adams City High School. So anyway, I was reading through some excerpts from this publication, and the offer still stands while supplies last. You can get from us a copy of this, original copy of The Irrational Inspirer, if you order anything from our store at kgov.com or call us at 800-8-NYART and order any of our Bible study albums, our DVDs, like when I debated college philosophy class, Get Out of the Matrix, that was fun, or The Plot, my manuscript, an overview of the whole Bible. Hey, somebody from Iowa just ordered The Plot. That was exciting. So now I want to read to you something we talked about last week out of this edition, and it's my resignation letter. I had been on the Accountability Committee, the Community Accountability Committee. Colorado state law mandated that every school and every education district had an accountability committee. And I was vice chair of the District Accountability Committee for Adams County District 14. And in that position, I would go to the school board meetings and knew more about what was going on in the schools. And I was doing this because our kids were ages, how old were they? 2, 3, 4. And that's before I realized how destructive the public schools were and that they had a thoroughly godless system, education system, and a godless curriculum. And I thought, you know, I'm a pastor. My kids are going to go to the schools. I better find out how the schools are doing in advance. Once my kids are in there, it's too late. And I'm glad I did that because I never put them in for not one day. I realized what a nightmare they were and how godless and how perverted some of the teachers and administrators were. And so we either homeschooled or had the kids going to Christian school, excellent Christian school. So anyway, I am on the accountability committee, and the high school, Adams City High School, which was in the district that my committee was to oversee, they decided, their principal and the school board and the superintendent of the district, they decided to hand out condoms to the kiddies at the school so they could have sex in a more relaxed atmosphere. So I did the research and found that if they did that, it would increase the teen pregnancy rates, not decrease them. And it would increase the sexual activity of the kiddies, the 13, 14, 15-year-old girls having sex with an increasing number of boys. And presented this to the school board and the principal, Tom Buddy, the superintendent, and found out that they didn't care at all about research. They liked the idea of giving condoms to kiddies because they were child sex advocates. They were child sex advocates. They liked the idea of kids having sex. So I resigned from that committee, and in doing so, I wrote a resignation letter, and it was published by a couple of the local newspapers in the Denver metro area. Well, then 3 years later, that resignation letter was reprinted by the state's largest newspaper at the time, the Rocky Mountain News. The Rocky Mountain News. So I'd like to read to you, it was reprinted as a guest editorial, and it was signed by Bob Enyart, the author of Bob Enyart Live, airing weekdays at 3, you know, all that. So here it is. I'm going to read it to you, all right? Today's teens face impossible challenge, by Bob Enyart. 3 years ago tomorrow, I resigned for a stupid reason from the Adams County District 14 Accountability Committee. Superintendent Richard Weber had just implemented a condom distribution program to reduce teen pregnancy and disease. I somehow had the backward notion that this would increase teen pregnancy, so I resigned in protest. Eventually, though, we all read of Adams City High School's birth rate increase of 42%. That was in the Rocky Mountain News, May 5th, 1992. Teen moms abound at Adams High, was the name of the article. One birth for every 8 girls yielded 108 children in 1 year, a record. A couple of years earlier, my resignation letter read, and then the rest of the article is quoted from my resignation letter. Here it is. To the District 14 Board of Education, I am hereby resigning. By distributing condoms in Adams City High School, we are running the risk of increasing teen pregnancy, AIDS, and venereal disease among our children. When the board chose this course of action, it did not reference any studies that indicated condom distribution would help reduce teen sexual problems. Why? Because there are none. The studies show the opposite. Planned Parenthood Federation of America financed the 1986 Harris Poll. The Planned Parenthood Poll, American Teens Speak Out, Sex, Myths, TV, and Birth Control. The teens in the poll admitted that Planned Parenthood approved comprehensive sex education courses did affect their behavior. There was a 50% higher rate of sexual activity for them after the class, with no significant increase in birth control use. Since the early 1970s, Congress has poured tens of millions of dollars into Planned Parenthood to help it bring sexuality curricula into our schools. During that time, the teen pregnancy rate soared by 90% to more than 1 million each year, plus nearly 500,000 teen abortions per year, an increase of 230%. A Johns Hopkins study reported by Zelnick and Kantner in Planned Parenthood's Family Planning Perspectives showed that from 1971 to 76, unintended pregnancy was actually higher among contraceptive users than among non-users. In these years, Planned Parenthood services became widespread to students. How Safe Are Condoms? Family Planning Perspectives reported in October 1986 an 18% annual failure rate for safe sex condoms. The Planned Parenthood News boldly stated, quote, "Our goal is to be ready as educators to help young people obtain sex satisfaction before marriage." They meet their goal well. Focus on the Family's James Dobson recently aired an interview with Christy. With her boyfriend, Jason, she attended a Planned Parenthood birth control class. The topics were so explicit and enticing that he persuaded Christy to have sex with him immediately after the class in the front seat of his car without protection. Unhappy parents were assured they could keep their children out of the condom program. Oh, really? How about the parents of 14-year-old Susan, whose boyfriend pulls out a school condom? How were they to protect their daughter from this program? The board says, be realistic. Teenagers are going to have sex anyway. That is fatalism, not realism. Sex ruins kids' lives. Do we lack faith in our children's character? If we expect 10th graders to have sex, they will. But if we challenge them with self-respect and abstinence, many will live up to that standard. Instead, we have set an impossible goal for our kids. Have sex and avoid the consequences. I have pulled my children out of the district and will keep them out until basic morality, which is constitutional, returns. 3 years later, that's the end of my resignation letter. 3 years later, my kids are still out of the public schools. The boys at Adams City are having a field day, and the girls, well, they will pay the price for years to come. When a prediction contrary to intended results comes true, the wise will take notice. District 14 has yet to take notice. And that was the resignation letter I wrote to the Board of Education at District 14 in Colorado, just on the border of Denver, North Denver. And, of course, they still have not learned. Why not? Not because they don't understand, but because they are child sex advocates. They are child sex advocates, and that's true of public school administrators all around the country, just like Planned Parenthood. You heard that, right? Planned Parenthood said that, I'm quoting from their own newsletter, the Planned Parenthood News, they stated, quote, "Our goal is to be ready as educators to help young people obtain sex satisfaction before marriage." That's why my mother was speaking to a women's Bible study group some years ago, and she opened up like this. I still remember how she opened up. I wasn't there. I heard about it later. And she opened up saying, Planned Parenthood is the enemy. Planned Parenthood is the enemy. Planned Parenthood is the enemy. That's a good way to open up. They are the enemy. They're child sex advocates. And you wonder, where do you find a child sex advocate? Well, how close is your local public school? Your nearest public school. Check it out. And if your daughter goes to that school, then know this, that she will be sexually harassed every day for the rest of her career in the public school system. Till she graduates high school, if you leave her there, she will be sexually harassed every day. And parents say, Christian parents, they say, oh, we have to send our kids to the public schools to be missionaries. And I ask them, well, are you a missionary at your office? You witness to everybody? You're leading all your coworkers to the Lord, your boss? Well, not exactly. Oh, but you expect your seven-year-old to overcome all the godless agenda of adults who've designed for her an education that will lead her to reject her parents' authority and her God and the gospel of Jesus Christ, and to get her committed to support lesbianism, bisexuality, which is epidemic in our middle schools and high schools, and homosexuality and abortion and fornication, and support pornography, and maybe think it's wrong to eat meat because, you know, animals are people too, and it's wrong to kill trees, even though it's a renewable resource. That's what you're putting your kids into, and the girls who go to public schools typically end up with very little self-respect. How do you keep your self-respect when jokes are made about your body by people around you every day, when you're asked for sexual favors as a child, when the kids around you, the cool kids, are having sex, and the weirdos are starting, are asking God to help them stay pure? And Christian parents, they wonder, why is it, how is it that I lost my daughter? How did that happen? Why has she turned against me? And so many of them will not even look back in hindsight and say, you know, I put my daughter in a godless education system, and I'm surprised that she turned out to be godless. How is it that you can't see that when you put your children in a godless education system, that that will influence them heavily? So we plead with you, if your kids are in a godless education system, to ask God for the wisdom and courage to save your kids. Please do that. Check out our website, KGov. That's KGOV.com. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.